is CBS Eye on the World. Here's John Batchelor.
The Islamic Republic of Iran. I go to London, The Guardian reporting. This is not a protest anymore. This is the start of a revolution, chanted a group of students outside the science department of Mashhad University. That assessment, at least until recently, writes The Guardian, was not shared by Washington or European capitals, or particularly by anyone who's watched Iran over these years. The brutality, the cruelty, the sadism of the authorities using the besieged militia volunteers who murder, using the police, using torture, imprisoning people without trials. The man who is now president of Iran, Raisi, had a reputation as a young man as a hanging judge. This is not a land you look to for fair-mindedness or restraint in any fashion, but taking on students is fresh. And in this instance, it's taking on students led by, we're told, young women. I welcome Benham Bentaleblu of the Foundation for the Defense of Democracies, a senior fellow, to help me with this story, the doubts that I just pointed out in Europe about how long will it last. Will it flare and then be crushed? And then the comments by Washington, by the director of the CIA, by Europe, and especially what does this mean for the regime? Is the regime taking this in earnest the way it has the protests during the early stages of the COVID or the protests when it has over the years when people push back about civil rights or about the threat of the regime in Tehran? Benham, a very good evening to you. The first thing. We doubt first when there's a protest because of the brutality. Is it different this time? Good evening to you, Benham.
A very good evening to you, John. A pleasure to be back with you. Listen, you know, there is great connectivity and signs of contrast here, but zooming out 50,000 feet, these protests, just like the ones that began in the COVID era, just like the ones that were touched off by the response to the downing of the Ukrainian airliner, just like the protests that happened over the high oil prices and more recently the high food prices. And again, prior to that, the high food prices, these beginning by the hijab and, of course, the brutal killing by the country's morality police of the 22-year-old Mahsa Amini, all reflect the same thing, that since 2017, geographically and demographically diverse protesters, building on a decade of failed labor strikes and the very clear failure of the inability of reformists or the reform movement to even change marginal things in the Islamic Republic, have all been protests that are political in nature and are all moving towards revolution. This is brought to you by a chasm between state and society when you have an Islamist and an authoritarian government and a society that is nationalist and wants democratic and representative governments. This fundamental chasm and this fundamental cleavage cannot hold. And these different booms and bursts of protest that we've seen since 2017, overtly transgressing red lines, literally calling for the demise of the supreme leader, the end of the Islamic Republic, talking about opposition figures, burning pictures of the country's former chief terrorist, IRGC, Quds Force Commander Qasem Soleimani, burning pictures of the current supreme leader, Khamenei, ripping out pictures from children's textbook of the country's founding father of the Islamic Republic, Ayatollah Khomeini. This is indeed a revolution, has been a revolution, and it would be a shame for Washington and others to continue to miss it. Just because the regime retains the monopoly on the use of force, because they have the guns, they have the hyper-stratified security apparatus that has been added to and funded and backed from the most local levels of vigilantes to besieged paramilitaries to the law enforcement forces and its various special groups and morality branches. And then, of course, the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps architecture itself. Just because they have all of that, that doesn't mean we should be turning our attention away from them or prematurely saying that this is the end of the protest movement. 3 weeks in, Iranians continue to prove to the world that they will risk life and limb, and indeed have been risking life and limb with between 130 and 150 killed, depending on reports that you can see right now in the press, and they show no signs of giving up. And if anything, The street power that we see in the country right now is being amplified by select institutional strike power, strikes that Raisi had commented about and strikes that Iranian students had been commenting about because they were happening across educational institutions. If those strikes are amplified within the service sector and more broadly strategic sectors, such as the energy sector, including management and employees, you will get conditions economically, socially, and politically quite similar to the series of shocks that helped bring down the end of the monarchy in 1979.
The demographics of the protesters, emphasis is on the students, on the universities. That is one very well-to-do filter. I understand, but does it include the simple of the simple tradesman? Does it include the farmer? Does it reach to the many regions, all the subsets of Iran, or is this focused on large cities where the cameras are?
The most fascinating thing about the 2017 to present protests, with a few minor exceptions, of course, is that they are nationally amplified and they begin outside in. They begin quite literally with the people living on the geographic, social, and political periphery of the Islamic Republic. And in some of the instances where protests were not amplified, from rural town to village to provincial capital, all the way up into a big city, like you had, for instance, in response to the flood protests in 2018, 2019, when you heard from members of the diaspora who had heard from people protesting that they wished the floods would take Tehran, because while the country was moving and the country was on fire, the upper middle class in Tehran had not been moving and had not been backing some of those protests. What you see now is qualitatively different, but of course, amplifying this national uniting sense of grievance that transcends class and ethnicity. And in this case, the most fascinating thing is that Mahsa Amini, Kurdish Iranian, as we know, comes from the town of Safdez in Iranian Kurdistan. When there were protests outside of the hospital where she was ultimately pronounced dead after they had beaten her into a coma that she was in for 3 days, not only were there protests outside of that hospital that evening, there were protests inside her hometown of Safdez in Kurdistan on her funeral. And again, those were amplified between small town and country capital within hours. So that shows you the shared sense of grievance and the national connectivity of this issue brought to you by frustration.
The incident of Nida Aga Sultan. That was June of 2009. I want to mention it because that is, I think, one of the drivers of the doubt about the protests. Nida Aga Sultan was murdered by the besieged. We had a video of it. There were remarks for days afterwards because this was a large number of people in turning out my memory. Benham, help me on the particulars. After a stolen election by Ahmadinejad. From Museveni and the Green Movement. The murder was in video, and yet, so you're saying this is widespread. Has the besieged changed since the days they would murder somebody and get away with it? Is it a weaker besieged today than it was then?
You raise an excellent question, because unfortunately, there have been one too many women, one too many innocent lives lost, one too many people who have their lives ahead of them. There are tons and tons and tons of Neda Aga Sultans. There are tons and tons and tons of Mahsa Aminis, and more recently, Hadis Najafis, and previously, Sattar Beheshtis and Puya Bakhtiaris, and going back even further, Zahra Kazemis, that have the potential to ignite these passions and show the world how repressive and how brutal these regime thugs and their security forces and the political elite that support this regime that engages in this kind of behavior routinely really are. The Iranian people, again, have risked life and limb on all those occasions, being outnumbered and outgunned sometimes, or being quite outnumbered sometimes and outgunned all the time, I should say, given that the regime has these security forces that they use to violently beat back protesters. And as we saw in the 2019 protests that were triggered in November, popularly called the Aban protests, the regime engaged in that brutal crackdown, not all on video, but under the cover of an internet blackout for 6 to 7 days, where 1,500 protesters were killed with weapons of war. It's the highest recorded level of violence since the beginning of the Islamic Revolution from the state against the street. So this is a qualitatively different kind of situation we're all dealing with here. I mean, one can only take their hat off to the bravery and the political resolve of the protesters who, despite knowing this history, despite knowing what they're up against, keep coming out. It's a again, way too premature to pull the plug, but comparisons are worth making. 2009, a little over a decade and a half ago, is a world away and is like yesterday in the mind of the Iranian population. So though some of those analogies are worth making, but the real trendsetters are the ones that we should be looking at from 2017 to present, which show that the population is not going to be triggered by something that the regime does to contest itself. As you mentioned, it was in response to the stolen election from Mousavi, former prime minister. This is the population saying since 2018, Esla talab usul yara diya tamama majira, which translates to reformist, principalist, the jig is up. And so long as that sentiment is there, even if there is a violent crackdown, God forbid worse than we saw what was done to Nedav Sultan, that crackdown will ultimately underwrite the other. The security forces have not cracked at the national level. The regime will use money. It continues to generate from illicit revenues, particularly oil exports and petrochemical exports, as well as regional trade, as well as non-dollar denominated trade, to continue to fund these people to kill their compatriots. And that's why enforcing the penalties that we have on the books and escalating them is the right thing to do by one's head and by one's heart on this issue.
Ben and Ben Talib, Senior Fellow of Foundation for the Defense of Democracy, is apprising us of the street violence by the Basij and their authorities against the young people and the old people and the protests in Iran. However, politics, when we come back to politics of the Islamic Republic of Iran right now from the point of view of Washington. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.